Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business. We talk about things that affect the game on the field. And as always, with me is Neil Stratton with Inside the League. Neil, how are you doing this morning?
Doing great, Justin. Great to be here.
Gotcha. Well, obviously, since the last time we talked, we've had games played on the field, which is a good thing. We had college football the first week kickoff with a lot of upsets, and then the NFL just kicked off, last night. We'll have some more games tonight, and we're rolling into the football season there, and a lot of shakeups. One thing we did have was a quarterback trade. Sam Bradford went from the Philadelphia Eagles to the Minnesota Vikings for a first and a fourth round pick because of the injury to Teddy Bridgewater. And really that forces Carson Wentz into the starting job. And that's something that, they didn't anticipate, being that that's basically not what they said. They said, hey, we're going to kind of redshirt him and different things like that. But, with that being the case, one thing we wanted to look at was which rookie quarterback will have the biggest impact this season. Obviously, with the Tony Romo injury, Dak Prescott will be starting for the Dallas Cowboys. And now with the Sam Bradford trade, Carson Wentz will be starting for the Eagles. And then you have Jared Goff, the number one overall pick, which is right now the third-string quarterback there. So, what's your thoughts on, who will have the best year this year of the rookie quarterbacks? And then in 5 years, who do you think is going to be that best quarterback out of this year's draft?
Well, I think the player that has the best chance to have a major impact this year among the rookie quarterbacks is a former Mississippi State Bulldog, Dak Prescott. I mean, he's got a situation where the Cowboys have a lot of weapons and a very good offensive line and a quarterback and a head coach who's a play caller. And I think that if Jason Garrett is smart, he'll keep the playbook somewhat limited, and he'll mainly task Prescott with handing off to Ezekiel Elliott. If that's the case, I think he's got a good chance to not have to make all the throws to win the games and can use his feet to make things happen. And I think he's got a decent chance to have a pretty good impact. I would say he probably has the best shot right now. Obviously, given the fact that Carson Wentz goes into the season as a starter, he could have an impact as well, but it could be a pretty negative impact. I don't know how you make the jump from D2 football to the NFL in that short of time period, especially given the fact that you're going into the season with a cracked rib that you're still kind of recovering from, and that also hampered your development a bit. I think there's been a lot made that he's taken mental reps and he's tried to be very focused and tried to really, work through everything he could. But I think one thing that is really hard to replicate moving from the college game to the NFL game, even if you're coming from the FBS level, is the play speed. And it's really hard to adjust and make those, adjustments without having a lot of reps and a lot of practice. And even the preseason doesn't really replicate that fully. So I think Carson Wentz is going to have a hard time. I think we could see Paxton Lynch play at some time this year, although I think Trevor Siemian did a nice job last night of managing the game and obviously brought the team back from a deficit and threw a couple of interceptions, but I think on balance had a solid, maybe workmanlike type performance. But who's to say what's left? It's a long season. There's a lot of things could happen. I think Paxton Lynch could come in there at some point, but I still see him a little down the line from the others. And who's to say where Jared Goff, where his season is headed? I mean, a healthy scratch in week one is probably not what the Rams had in mind. But again, we have a long season. A lot could happen, and maybe he bounces back from this. But again, I think if you rank those four, and I think those are probably the four that have the best chance at playing this year and having a serious impact, it'd be Prescott number one, followed by Lynch. I think Lynch is probably going to get some playing time before the year's over and some meaningful time. Wentz, I just don't know, especially with Chase Daniel behind him. I think Daniel probably gets the lion's share of the playing time before the season's out. And then Jared Goff is somewhere trailing. He's kind of a big wild card right now. That's my look at those top four anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dak Prescott, when you say, hey, who's going to make an immediate impact, I think that's obviously your reasoning there is great. But I think, you know, obviously the Cowboys want, you know, Tony Romo in there as soon as possible. And with saying it's 6 to 8 weeks and he'll be in there. You know, basically Dak Prescott's a kind of a placeholder there. Now Carson Wentz is the quarterback for the now and quarterback for the future. You know, so that's where a standpoint of, hey, you know, how much do they really try to get him ready and, you know, balance the situation, getting ready for the future and then also trying to win now there. You know, I was really disappointed in Jared Goff. You know, even watching the Hard Knocks, you saw a guy who maybe wasn't all in, you know, to use those words in regards to, and maybe it's just his personality, but it didn't seem like he was a guy who was that, hey, you know, just eat, breathe, and, you know, sleep football there. And if you're going to be a quarterback, you're going to be the number one overall pick. You think of guys like Peyton Manning and, you know, Andrew Luck and guys like that who are really, you know, football junkies. And I'm not saying that Jared Goff is. I'm just saying from the information that I was be able to watch on Hard Knocks, that's the conclusion that I came, you know, with there. And I'm sure it's very overwhelming. You're going to a new city and the team's just moved and now you're trying to figure out the playbook and it's totally different from looking over at a card and you know, running a play in college to having to get in a huddle and the verbiage and different things like that. But, you know, I just think that, hey, a guy who was the number one overall pick, you know, that you know, being, like you said, a healthy scratch and the number three is not what the Rams had wanted, and it's something that, you know, could be concerning, you know, down the road. And then, you know, I think, you know, like you mentioned, you know, Paxton Lynch, hey, I think he was a guy who had a ton of upside, you know, and people really saw him kind of really raise, you know, his stock through last year's college football season, kind of, you know, burst on the scene and you know, just went a meteoric rise there. So, obviously, he was drafted in the first round to be the quarterback of the future of the Denver Broncos. When that is, you know, that remains to be seen there. So, Where do you see? I mean, if you, you know, again, we have a real small sample size, and we just did this draft, you know, a couple of months ago there in April. But who would you be betting on now, from what you know? Did it change from April till now in September?
As far as, I mean, you mean who's made the biggest leap since?
No, I mean, who would you, hey, if you're looking at this in 5 years, who would you say, hey, he's going to be the best guy out of the bunch?
Sure. I still would bet on Goff. I think Lynch has got to kind of make a jump in maturity, and I'm still not sure that Memphis prepares a guy for the NFL wars the way that playing at a major college does. And I don't know. I still have my questions about Wentz, given the fact that he comes from a small school. Again, another big adjustment to make. I could see Goff being number one because I expect the Rams to make a coaching change probably after this season, perhaps maybe after next year. I have a lot of respect for Jeff Fisher, but I just don't think that is a train that's on the right track. And presuming they do bring in a new coaching staff, I think developing and grooming Goff is going to be a priority for him. And so I presume they'll bring in someone who's somewhat of a quarterback specialist, and I think that's going to give him a good opportunity to grow and to be something special. I think a sleeper might be Jacoby Brissett with the Patriots. I know that right now, obviously, his path is blocked. Obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo starts the first four games this year with Tom Brady on the bench. But Garoppolo is a free agent after this season, and if he performs well, he's obviously going to be looking. If he doesn't perform well, he's going to be looking for a big new contract. It's unlikely that the Patriots are going to want to spend that money. And Tom Brady is at the top of his game, and 5 years doesn't seem like a very long time, but it's very possible he rides off into the sunset and kind of wants to spend more time with Giselle. if that's the case, then presuming Bill Belichick is still there, then the Patriots probably will be stocked with some weapons and will have developed Brissett. And I think he's got a lot of things going for him. He could be kind of your sleeper best passer in 5 years in the NFL based on this draft.
Yeah, I mean, you bring a lot of big points there. And everybody, you heard it here first, Jeff Fisher's getting fired, according to Neil Stratton. A guy who I like, who I watch a lot, obviously, being here in Michigan, and I think could be kind of that prototypical pocket passer and different things like that, is Connor Cook. Obviously, he's with Oakland. He's behind a young quarterback in Derek Carr. But he's a guy who I think, in four years, maybe they move him. Maybe they use him as a chip to go get some draft picks to help, build that team there. Because I think Connor Cook, hey, did he have some maturity issues? Yes. From everything I've kind of heard there, I mean, it wasn't more of a leadership there. It was just kind of, hey, he needed to kind of grow up there. And now he won't have any pressure on him sitting behind a Derek Carr there, because he's the presumed franchise, quarterback there. But I think he's a guy who's a pro-style, Michigan State really is able to groom guys. They've put guys in the NFL. They look at a guy like a Kirk Cousins who just was a franchise tag guy. Over the years, the Big Ten schools are able to put those quarterbacks in there. And I think Connor Cook's going to be a guy who's, could still be that franchise quarterback, down the road there. We'll continue to have these conversations about, the draft in 2016. Class, because obviously there's a ton of quarterbacks drafted, the most in kind of recent history there with all the quarterbacks that had been drafted there. So, again, we're right into the NFL season. There is some rumors in regards to Marshawn Lynch possibly thinking about coming out of retirement. One thing we did want to talk about is, hey, if it's week five, week six, and your offense is going, who would you try to get out? The Peyton Manning, who was on NBC's coverage last night and looked like he was kind of feeling out, hey, am I going to do this booth role? Am I going to go into TV there with Al and Chris Collinsworth? He said he's done, but obviously, everybody, get an itch there. Calvin Johnson, who is going to be on Dancing with the Stars, so we know he's going to still be staying in good shape there. And obviously Marshawn Lynch has said that, hey, there's been rumors here in the last 48 hours that he's potentially thinking about coming back to the NFL. Which guy would you want if you're trying to kind of make a run? Peyton, Megatron, or Beast Mode?
Boy, that's kind of a tough question. Obviously, Peyton Manning, I think, offers you the most impact theoretically as a quarterback, as a seasoned guy, as a guy who I don't expect to gain 50 pounds in the next 6 months and really go into total post-career mode, I guess you'd say. I think he's still pretty solid, and maybe having an off-season completely restful would give him a chance to get his arm back to strength. And so I think there's potential there, but I think that Peyton Manning probably is a guy who's ready for post-career. And as you alluded to, I mean, he's probably looking at broadcast. He's obviously got a number of endorsement opportunities that he can capitalize on. I don't think the hunger would be there. I think Calvin Johnson, of the three players, has the most left in the tank. Obviously, he struggled with injuries the last few years and has been a little unreliable as far as playing time for that reason. But he's a special talent, and if you could add a Calvin Johnson, even as a decoy, that would be a tremendous upgrade to your offense, and you probably wouldn't have to sit an impact player, given how many three and four receiver sets most offenses use these days. But I think if you were looking for a guy to get you through week 6 through 17, the one guy, it's probably Lynch, because you could really, I think he would mix in with almost any offense. I think if he got that kind of rest, give another month with no training camp, I think you could still plug him in rather quickly. He could kind of join you on the fly without losing a whole lot. And I think Lynch probably doesn't have another full season in him, but I think he's got another half season in him. And I mean, I think the guy's proven he's almost impervious to pain. I mean, you can, it seems like no matter how many carries you give him, he wants another 5 or 10 more. So if it was me, I'd go with Lynch, given all the factors and the fact that you're coming in midseason, and he probably would be able to make that adjustment without too many negatives there. I think Lynch is the pick for me.
Oh, I think you're 100% right on everything you say. One thing, I don't think Calvin Johnson's got the desire to play anymore. You know, he's kind of that Barry Sanders guy, you know, who, hey, is fine walking away. Never had that true, you know, hunger, you know, and just there where you knew that, hey, he always wanted it, like a Peyton Manning or a Marshawn Lynch there that was going to play until he couldn't play anymore. So I think Marshawn Lynch, like you said, is a chance. And I think, that's kind of the talk is like, hey, is he going to come back to Seattle and, here in a month, and kind of get ready there, because, hey, does he still have that desire and that hunger to be able to pound the rock and really, kind of cement his legacy? Because the guy, to me, he's a borderline Hall of Famer, and hey, he comes back and rushes for another 1,000 yards and helps Seattle, to get a chance, to win another Super Bowl, then, can kind of cement his legacy as being a, future Hall of Famer there, if that's something that is important to Marshawn Lynch. I don't know if that's the case, but, definitely that helped kind of cement that fashion there. So, interesting, thing. We'll see if any of those guys come out. Like I said, I think Marshawn Lynch is probably the best guy if you're putting money on it in regards to those three there. So, one thing that I had done on footballnextlevel.com is look at the undrafted players that are currently in the NFL that made the opening day 53-man roster. And if you look at that as of 2 days ago, September 7, 2016, there's 478 players on a 53-man roster that were not drafted. So 28% of the 32 NFL teams' 53-man rosters are made up of undrafted free agents, and 61 of those players are rookies. There's also 240 undrafted players that are on practice squads, which that's 75% of the NFL practice squads are made up of undrafted players there. And the top guy who in this year's draft who didn't make a 53-man roster was a guy from my state here in West Michigan, Western Michigan's Willie Beavers with the Minnesota Vikings, who was a fourth-round pick who was released, didn't make the 53-man roster, did make the Vikings practice squad there. Neil, I know before we went on the air, we were talking a little bit about this. What's your thought in regards to you undrafted guys, why they make it, why, scouts have a hard time actually getting the draft right there, and some of these guys do end up being a, cog in the machine of the NFL?
Obviously, the NFL is dominated by the Tom Brady's and the Drew Brees's and the big names and the major personalities that kind of drive the train from a marketing standpoint, but there are a lot of people, there are a lot of needs for role players too, and people that can help you do the little things and play special teams and serve on practice squads. And those kinds of players are perfect for that. I mean, these are types of players that are churned pretty frequently and don't stick around the league very long. And after all, there's a, I guess the average career is about 3 years, and these are the guys that are kind of bringing down the curve when you talk about the players that have 14, 15, 16-year careers. That's one reason. There's always going to be a need for players that kind of play the small roles. But also, obviously, they're very economical. Players on practice squad aren't making nearly as much as even what a rookie is making. And they can be released at any time, and so you've got roster flexibility that you don't have otherwise. And then I think the fact that I believe there's no tougher job than drafting NFL players. I think there's the size of the sheer size of the rosters across the nation and the number of teams that play college football makes it a voluminous job. And even as much vetting as there takes place, and even though there's a combine and there's a series of pro days across the nation, there are still a lot of players that slip through the cracks. There is no minor league per se although the colleges are, you know, serve as a pretty good one, pretty good de facto minor league, there isn't one that develops players in a way that, let's say, the NBA D League does or minor league baseball does. So there is only one way to try to develop those players, and that's to keep those undrafted around for a year or two, see if you're seeing promise, see if you can develop them and on the practice squad or even at the end of your 53-man roster, and see if they can show promise and maybe be someone that you can plug in. A lot of these players are pretty raw. We're seeing more and more international players coming in. We're seeing more and more basketball players trying to play football, and those aren't necessarily a major portion of these players, but the point is there are a lot, these NFL teams are looking for players that are kind of diamonds in the rough and maybe a bit more raw than what you might expect, and so they're more willing to do that. As you know, Justin, they expanded the size of practice squads this before the season from 5 to 10 players, and you know, by the numbers here, half of the league, 16 teams, have at least 8 undrafted free agents on their practice squad. So I think the practice squads are working the way they're supposed to, in that teams are trying to look at them as a developmental area rather than a place to stash a second, third-year player who's still got practice squad eligibility that is a little bit more developed and they can, you know, kind of serve as a, you know, taxi squad, kind of almost as an extension of your guys that you don't dress on Sunday. So I think everyone's looking for ways to make those lesser players into something more. And usually those guys that slip through the draft, those 7 rounds, there's still some quality out there, some guys that offer promise, and so that's why some teams miss on them. After all, 256 picks sounds like a lot, but it's really not that many when it comes to the number of NFL players that are out there playing college football.
Yeah, and I agree with you, you know, on all those comments that you had made there. I think the biggest thing is that, you know, the NFL has to spend so much time on the first-round picks, first and second-round picks, that when we talk about fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, those, the time that they spend vetting those players doesn't, you know, become so much there. And then I think it comes down to, you know, guys just in general is that, you know, some guys' goal is to, you know, make it to the NFL, and some guys' goal is to make it in the NFL. And by meaning that, is some guys, when they get drafted or whatever, that's a celebration. That's the end of their journey. That's where, you know, that was their goal. And some guys want to make a career, you know, and that's, I think, the hardest thing is to really find that information out there, you know, because everybody's guarded and everybody says the right things and they're coached up and everything's like that. So really try to, you know, you can look and see what guys you can do on the field and athleticism, stuff like that. But you know, getting into the NFL, it is truly a job. It is a 6:30 to 8 o'clock at night, you know, from time you go to off-season workouts to training, to mini camp, to training camp, to, you know, preseason, to the regular season. It's a, you know, time-consuming, you know, occupation. And yes, you're getting paid handsomely, but you have to invest yourself in that. And some guys, really, to me, you know, me, aren't willing to do that. And that's why you see these other guys who maybe didn't have the, you know, the greatest 40 of time and different things like that, but they were willing to put in the time. And, you know, that's why they're, you know, that's why 30% of the NFL is made up of guys that weren't drafted. And that's to me, that's telling the scouts they're failing, because, you know, Willie Beavers being a fourth-round pick that doesn't make the 53-man roster, the Vikings staff failed on that. That's what that is. That's the grade. You failed. Your guy didn't make, you know, your guy didn't make the 53-man roster. Now, he might eventually, you know, but that's where, you know, basically, you know, scouts are graded on guys that get to a second contract. Well, if you don't even make it through the first cut, you know, first there, that's not, you know, getting A marks there. But, you know, I think it's an important part of the NFL. It's always going to be something there because, like you said, it's a hard job to be able to evaluate guys and draft guys. And there's guys that there's success and failures all the times in the draft. And, you know, there, and we're also talking about human beings, and we're talking about human beings that are imperfect, you know, grading guys, you know, players that are imperfect. So it's never a perfect, you know, system there. So, you know, definitely some interesting things there. With about 5 minutes to go, let's kind of switch the thing and talk about the draft, but What do you think's harder, you know, getting good offensive linemen with all the spread offenses we see in college football, or secondaries? We've seen, you know, guys, draft picks getting released here recently, you know, or traded high draft picks, secondary guys getting there. What's, you know, your thoughts on that real quick there, Neil?
Well, you know, I think offensive line is still the hardest position to build. You've got five guys. You've got to mesh. They may be from divergent backgrounds. You're not going to draft five guys in 1 year and then see them mature together over 4 years, 5 years. You've got to kind of take pieces from different places and meld them into one and develop a chemistry. And then the quarterback's got to be comfortable with them, and they've got to be able to mesh with their line calls and understand the various blitz schemes that an NFL offense is facing these days. And there are a number of challenges there. But it seems like these days building a secondary might be tougher for a number of reasons. Number one, as you alluded to, we saw Dee Milliner cut by the Jets just a few years, 3 years after he was drafted in the first round. We see Justin Gilbert traded by the Browns, another guy that didn't work out in a very short period of time. It's hard to figure out why, but these high cornerbacks seem to be struggling a bit to fit in. Why is that? I don't know. There's a number of factors. Obviously, the speed of the game is different. Besides the receivers, we're seeing the guys like a Calvin Johnson that are really big and really fast and can really do amazing things downfield. Demaryius Thomas, those kinds of players. I think you're also seeing the way that offenses are changing, and some of the positions that we're seeing that have only been around for 3 or 4 years, the slot receiver, and how much that has become, how much has it impacted the game. Now you need three corners on the field. You need a safety that can cover a guy like that. Whereas you may, you know, do you bring a safety in to kind of stop the run? You know, there's so many different variables now that are different, and so many different ways to evaluate the players. It's really kind of become hard to build that secondary and, again, mesh it, put it together, be able to change it out as you lose players in free agency or what have you. So whereas I think the offensive line would have been a slam dunk harder place to go in the past, I think the secondary is starting to rival it as far, you know, as NFL offenses become more complicated and nuanced. And that's something that I think teams are going to start to have to adjust to more and more so as they go forward.
Yeah, I'm with you there on all those points that you had made, you know, on that. And so it definitely, you know, again, the evolution of college football, I think, really hurt, you know, all of the different things in there in regard to the evaluation process. It's made the scouts and GMs, you know, jobs harder on both of those, you know, positions and different things like that. So, Neil, what's, you know, regards to stuff that's going on inside the league or any agent news. One thing I did want to, I know we don't have a ton of time, but what have you heard from the new agents that just had passed the test in regards to that 1.5% kind of ruling there? You know, obviously, you know, you have 90 seconds. Anything that you want to bring up about that?
Well, the new agents, I think, are fired up and ready to roll, and they're going to run through a wall, and they're going to pretty much do whatever it takes to sign a player. And you would expect that from the new agents. I mean, they've kind of realized the goal and accomplished the dream. The smaller firms, the veteran agents, the mid-sized firms are the ones that are still grappling with the impact of the 1.5 and trying to figure out how they're going to be able to pitch players on 3%. It's something that I think is still ongoing and a conversation that's still taking place. I'm not sure where it's going to go, but we're trying to coach, especially the new agents, that the bigger firms probably won't have as many, won't try to soak up those lesser players as much, and so maybe there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I know inside the league will be following, you know, and reporting on that. And we will obviously, as we get kind of closer to signing, you know, period here in the next couple of months, you know, talk about further here on inside the
definitely.
Football business, as it is a big professional topic there in the football world. So, Neil, as always, a great show. Looking forward to another great weekend of football. Obviously, the NFL kicks off here on Sunday, so it should be another great weekend, and look forward to talking with you next week there, Neil.
Absolutely. Can't wait, Justin. Thanks again.
Have a great day.
You too.